During the pandemic, incidents of community gun violence skyrocketed in some of the most vulnerable parts of Oakland. Today, citywide homicide rates are decreasing. But some West Oakland neighborhoods face a different reality. There have been twice as many gun homicides as there were at this time last year.
It's not that COVID created those conditions. COVID exposed those conditions.
Guillermo Cespedes is the chief of Oakland's Department of Violence Prevention, or DVP. He's had a decades-long career in the field of violence prevention. Since 2017, the DVP has collaborated with a network of organizations working at the community level to interrupt violence. They focus on shooting and homicide response, as well as retaliation prevention. Their programs offer direct services like educational and employment opportunities. They provide counseling for those impacted by violence, and they host outreach events in neighborhoods experiencing community trauma due to gun violence. For the first 3 years the DVP was established, Oakland saw its lowest gun violence rate since 1999. Cespedes explains the pandemic uptick in homicides in some parts of West Oakland.
COVID hits and all of the communities across the United States, like the communities in West Oakland, had the largest spike in 1 year ever in recorded data between 2020 and 2021. Why is that? So the safety net, what little safety net there was in these communities, fell out. We call it the pandemic on top of the pandemic.
My name is Annette Miller.
Before the pandemic, many people from marginalized communities in Oakland were already struggling.
My name is Annette Miller. I'm a community organizer, a mother.
West Oakland residents are still impacted by historical disinvestment practices such as redlining. And the rise in unemployment at the beginning of the pandemic is correlated with an increase in gun violence across major U.S. cities, according to researchers at UC Davis's Violence Prevention Research Program.
We changed the name.
Chief Cespedes says that when basic needs like food, shelter, and employment aren't met, violence increases. But when COVID hit,
been around for 20 years, but it
pivot.
We were in some communities the only form of government that was accessible to many residents. And all our community efforts shifted from violence prevention to COVID prevention for a little bit over a year. Most of us became more isolated. We had contact with less people. We had less hugs. So all of that impacted violence. And then the fear that got created. COVID came with a tremendous amount of fear. So all of that was a recipe for people reacting with violence because we were all scared.
Many risk factors for violence are rooted in the kind of structural racism and generational trauma that West Oakland has long faced as a historically Black area. DVP cultural liaison Umi Vaughn describes violence as a communicable disease that disproportionately infects individuals and families living in communities with underlying conditions such as historical structural racism, chronic economic disparities, absence of quality health care, scarce educational opportunities, and early and pervasive contact with the criminal justice system.
The communities that don't have those underlying conditions don't have violence. It's that simple. We think violence is preventable because we know when it occurs, where it occurs, and whom it impacts.
The DVP says most violence is committed between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. More than 50% of the gun violence in West Oakland occurs in only 3 of its nearly 20 neighborhoods. And the percentage of the population that's responsible for gun violence in Oakland? It's a tiny fraction. A case study from 2012 to 2013 showed that less than 0.1% of the population was at risk for committing serious violence at any given time. That's about 400 people citywide. It's a small subset of people responsible for perpetrating gun violence. But the impact is felt by all West Oakland residents, including the youngest ones. 6-year-old Treasure plays in her grandmother Annette Miller's backyard. Miller is an active community organizer and chair of the Hoover Foster Resident Action Council. She's lived in West Oakland her whole life. Her family has repeatedly faced violence and the trauma that comes with it.
As an African-American mother who has lost a son to gun violence and who also has a son in the hospital right now with a gunshot wound to his head, who in 2020 got shot protecting a girl, just knowing that a 3-year-old, 4-year-old, 5-year-old, 6-, 7-, 8-year-old is living in a household where they either lost a parent or lost a brother or lost a cousin to gun violence, it's traumatizing. And no matter what we might think, those kids are listening in these households.
Miller knows that a single violent incident can ripple across an entire community.
And it's more traumatizing on families and community members also, because the loss of a young child or the loss of a loved one in your community, it trickles on down to other youth, community members, you know, to feel in a way they don't feel safe in their community.
Exposure to violence leads to negative physical and psychological effects. Miller says that kids need to be taught how to manage the emotions that stem from trauma. So as they grow up, they'll have problem-solving tools to turn to that don't involve violence, therefore stopping a vicious cycle.
It's like educating black and brown people to understand that you eliminate your own race by killing off your friend, a classmate, in general, somebody you might not have known. But killing those folks is traumatizing to any community, in any black household, black and brown household, right about now here in Oakland, California.
Kentrell Killens would agree. He's worked in violence interruption for 2 decades. He's now a direct service coordinator with the Department of Violence Prevention. Killens focuses on West Oakland, where he grew up. He says it's important to address the generational trauma caused by chronic exposure to violence and structural racism.
I've grown up with individuals who, you know, struggled to eat the night before, but then are expected to be at school and be productive students the next morning. But we talk about elementary school kids that then, you know, in turn go into school sites with unresolved issues where the systems itself are not designed to deal with the level of trauma that people's exposed to. So we're seeing generational patterns of individuals being involved in the level of trauma. The families that I know are families that my grandparents knew. So it's just a long history of families that suffering from a lot of the same conditions that are, you know, still being addressed generations later.
Violence interrupters like Killens work with hundreds of individuals who are considered to be at risk for perpetuating violent acts. Their clients get connected to direct services like healthcare and job opportunities to help meet their baseline needs. They're also paired with trained mentors from within their communities who offer one-on-one life coaching. The relationships become a crucial support system for clients who might not have anyone else rooting for them. These services can be critical interventions to reach people before they resort to violence or to prevent them from committing further harm. But the focus of life coaching is not only to help people move beyond a life of violence. It's also to help them help others in their communities to live violence-free lives.
As long as we're implanted in those communities, then we can also provide this opportunity, you know, to employ some of these people through those pathways. So we can start them off as mentors in their community, and individuals can, you know, make a decision on a pathway that they would like to choose, like street outreach or, you know, community organizing or violence interruption, any form of direct service where they can, again, now become a part of the solutions and have even much more impact because, again, they're directly a part of the communities that are in the conversations, are in the conflicts. And so they have a lot stronger influence than, you know, even us showing up with the direct service.
Direct services for violence prevention were stalled by the pandemic, but they've been back up and running for about a year. And in that time, rates of gun assault and homicides in some West Oakland communities increased. But data shows that one-on-one interventions such as the life coaching offered by the DVP has historically cut gun violence in Oakland by a third. The city and state are banking on community violence prevention programs. Earlier this summer, the Oakland City Council approved a DVP plan to allocate over $19 million to its network of community organizations through next summer. It's the largest investment in violence prevention efforts in Oakland's history. The state recently contributed an additional $6 million to the DVP. The money will be used to expand life coaching programs and community outreach efforts. From West Oakland, I'm Erin Bump, reporting for KPFA.